Hey, everybody. Welcome to a special edition of Objection. I am Dave Johnson, joined by Dan Mancini.
Greetings.
And we are we hit the airwaves sporadically, like when the old white man cabal decrees that we must, you know, do a podcast, Dan, or our funding will dry up.
That's correct, yeah.
So we really have no say in the matter. So, you know, that's just how things roll in the world of Objection. But we've been brought out of the old white man cabal's bunker to talk about a movie that's quite polarizing, I would say. It is Godzilla, which doesn't seem to have a lot of lukewarm opinions about it. Would you say, Dan? Like, is there many?
Oh, yeah, it's love it or hate it.
Love it or hate it.
Which is bizarre to me.
It is bizarre. So I think we are in the camp of we love it, and so is Mike Staley, who is our special guest. So, Mike, how's it going?
Oh, good.
And I think Mike was getting a taco or something.
Yes, he's filling up his scotch.
That's right. Yes, because every special guest gets a take home board game of Objection, you know, and
yes.
Scotch. So
and a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni.
Yes.
What?
You haven't gotten it yet?
No, I haven't gotten it.
All right, it's coming. It's coming. I promise.
All right.
So anyway, yeah, we're gonna talk some Godzilla here, and again, the three of us really, you know, really love it. I've got an unhealthy love for it, but we'll get into like our kind of love it, and we'll try to tackle some of the stuff people have been, you know, saying that they don't like about it, and just kind of going back and forth. And we got to do a shout out, like our colleagues on the other side, our F the Movie colleagues, they really hated it, right? And you listen to their podcast, right,
Mike? Yeah, I love those guys.
Patrick, yeah, they're awesome.
JB and Adam Risky all sat down just a couple days after it came out, and you know, Patrick is the king of moderation. He does this great job of taking diverse opinions and kind of making them flow so it's not too one-sided or the other. So he was kind of, he didn't really love it, but he didn't, you know, he didn't hate on it like JB and Adam did, who just went off. I think JB's first line was, I hate this movie. like, wow.
So that thing, and we use that just as a, not to pick on those guys, obviously, because
no.
They are awesome indeed, but we use that just kind of as a point of reference that it has elicited some strong opinions. So, and I think, you know, those guys are Godzilla fans too. So it's even fans, you know, have strong opinions on this. But anyway, before we kind of got into the nitty gritty, I thought we'd set the table, just what we were thinking before going into the movie, just kind of set the feel of things. And for me, you know, the trailers intrigued me. It definitely seemed like the way the trailers were built, it was going to be Godzilla shows up, army needs to react. Why is Godzilla there? Well, what's going to be the equivalent of the nuke blast? Maybe he's there because he's pissed at fracking or something, right? And so that's why he shows up, and the military must scramble to defeat Godzilla. And I, you know, and loved Godzilla growing up. You know, I kind of joke as far as the male role models who influenced me most growing up, it'd be like my dad, number one, and then it goes Batman, Godzilla, Optimus Prime. You know? that's probably how it shakes up. Maybe Man at Arms is in the top 10 at some point, right? So Godzilla had like very near and dear to my adolescent heart, and you know, post and pre adolescent heart, probably, to be honest. But I kind of went in there like, yeah, okay, we'll see. I wasn't psyched, especially to go see it. In fact, I'd sent you a quick text,
yep.
Short notice, hey, do you want to go check this out? And the stars aligned, and we were able to go and take a seat and see what happened. And the rest is history, but we'll get to that soon enough. But where was your head at, Mike?
You know, I was like you. I was a fan growing up. And having seen the teaser and then the first couple trailers, I was really psyched about it because they were not showing you a lot and they were giving you the opinion that, you know, it very well could be, you know, a monster attacks a major city and, you know, the military must come out to fight it. But having seen the Roland Emmerich version, having seen Cloverfield, you kind of had to assume that they were going to do something different and not remake the same movie over again.
And thankfully, as far as the Roland Emmerich goes, that's something we can all be thankful about.
Yes,
sure.
Yes.
How about you, Dan? What were your thinking prior to this?
I definitely grew up watching Godzilla. There was a local theater that would play, you know, sort of Saturday early afternoon matinees.
Nice.
Usually Godzilla with like a Three Stooges short and a Looney Tunes for kids. So we used to do that all the time. I'm not a huge fan of the series. I tend to think that the first one, which is serious, Gojira, is a little overrated as a monster movie. It's kind of corny. I think it's heavy-handed in terms of its message and stuff. Mm-hmm. But they're fun. I mean, I think that it's this weird series where this giant lizard progressively looks more and more like a dog.
And there's one movie in particular where he fights one that looks like a giant cat. So
yes, yeah. So from the trailers and stuff, it looked like, oh, it's almost a remake of the original. So I was kind of expecting some sort of nuclear message or, yeah, you know, some kind of environmental message,
right?
Tied to a giant lizard destroying the city.
And with a bunch of army guys getting squashed underfoot while they...
Right, right. And a pretty good performance from Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
That's right. What I was kind of expecting. And, yeah, it was... I was pleasantly surprised by the film.
All right.
By how Godzilla-y it actually is.
I mean, there were times, Michael, I think, you know, I felt like actually cheering. I mean, people were cheering in our theater. I was, mm-hmm, there were moments where I was just like, especially towards the end when you get the real haymakers, you know, but I was like, oh man, this is, you know, this is exactly what I was looking for. And just leaving the theater, I was on cloud nine. I've seen it a second time since then and enjoyed it even more. And just for some reason, it really activated that thing inside me that I loved as a kid. And like, to your point, like the movies, as far as movies go, the Godzilla movies aren't great at all. Like, no. I mean, we talked about, you know, characters and such are talked about in this movie, but I can't think of a single character except for like the little school kid in Godzilla's Revenge who imagines that he goes to Monster Island and runs away from Home Alone criminals.
Right.
That's dopey stuff, right? I mean,
and you have the little tiny twins in the
little
tiny
speak
at the same time.
Right.
I remember those. And you have Sarazawa in the first one who has the eye patch, the one-eyed scientist guy,
right,
who creates the thing that kills Godzilla, and who Ken Watanabe's character is named after in this one.
Beyond that, I got nothing. You know, I really don't. What you just remember is Godzilla, King of the Monsters. To me, that's what you remember. I mean, he is, like, he shows up to take care of business when business needs to be taken care of. And as corny and as rubbery as everything looks, just the idea of Godzilla, you know, that's way larger than life, presence, right, is just,
right.
That's what's always kind of wowed me. And, like, and he'll show up to smack around the Smog Monster put the hammer lock, on Ghidra, right? So,
right. What kind of surprised me about it was I was expecting, based on the trailers, a movie that tried to make some kind of logical sense of things.
Yeah.
Tried to kind of do the nerd thing of, well, it has to make sense. And instead, Edwards kind of, you know, there's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of setup, but he pretty much threw that out the window and said, this is a Godzilla movie. There are going to be things that are just... that's the way they are in the Godzilla universe. There are giant creatures that eat radioactivity. That doesn't make any sense, but it's Godzilla. And, you know, buckle up, because that's what we're doing here. And then there were those moments you talk about where, you know, basically the theater is cheering because it's huge Godzilla moments. That first time he uses his atomic breath.
That's huge.
I was like, this is a movie that's made by a guy who understands what drives a Godzilla movie. Period.
Absolutely.
This guy gets it.
That's a very concise way of putting that. And then, you know, the finishing move he puts on the female, you know.
Yes.
Muto
was brilliant. The tail thing was,
yeah, absolutely.
You know.
The tail attack, right.
And the other thing that he got right was, you know, because in the original series, Godzilla kind of becomes more and more of a kid-friendly thing, and more like he's there to protect people.
There's
these kind of middle period ones, which is, I think, what Edwards is going for, where Godzilla doesn't care about people one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
He's just not going to tolerate some other big monster stomping around anywhere.
Right.
If something exists, he is going to come and kill it.
Right. And there was not a shit ton of exposition. You know, that you didn't go through the whole thing. There weren't little kids who were calling out, Godzilla, please help us, you know, that kind of thing. So, like you said, there was a universe. These are the rules. Whether you like it or not, this is how it's going to function. And you're along for the ride, or you're going to sit back and say, I hate this thing. And, you know.
If it hadn't been those rules, it would have been some other kind. I would have walked out like, I don't know why that was a Godzilla movie.
Right. Which like a it lot was of just,
that could
say.
Have been any random giant lizard.
Yeah,
right. I mean, and the other thing, from the moment it starts in the beginning to the end, it is, I mean, it's kind of, it is very much a ride, which is kind of overused, but maybe, I don't know, just like, because everything points to the one, you know, the big collision at the end. Like, everything is building up to this thing that's going to happen from the first moment, which, again, I remember seeing that scene where the scene with the big trench where the first Muto burrows out. Remember that?
Yep.
I remember thinking explicitly in the trailer, like, well, that's Godzilla's tail, right? Or something. You know, that was Godzilla's whatever. And again, that's a nice kind of, you know, we got hoodwinked on that, and I thought that was nice. But the whole movie's got its own momentum. It's building up to this finale, and everything else is on the periphery. And as far as, like, the rules, like, I thought it was pretty clever how, you know, the monsters ate radiation, right? So then that your nuclear bomb arsenal, your nuclear bomb answer is tweaked all of a sudden. Or the EMP thing. I thought the EMP pulse stuff was really, well, yeah. That was good. Again, it was contrived, but
the brilliance of the eating the radioactivity thing, too, is you got the military trying to move these missiles, but the Mutos are tracking with it.
Right. Yep.
Like, they're going to go wherever that is. So it's like, well, good luck getting it where you need it to be, because they're going to intercept you.
That's right. And everything
midway through.
And the EMPs make sure everything's analog. So, you know, so, yeah, again, it's set up explicitly so you can get these situations where they can't just, you know, dial up their cell phone to deactivate the nuke. Mm. They have to do this kind of incursion, which worked. You know, it's a separate thing going on while the monsters beat on each other, but it's a compelling enough, yeah, it's a ticking time bomb scenario, but it works here because the situations were set up that support that. And, you know, it made sense within the rules that were created in what is essentially a fantasy world.
It's a pretty watertight script. I mean, let's the critical reaction, negative reaction to it is sort of like playing whack-a-mole. Like they have one objection to it, and you hit that down, and then, well, that's not really why I didn't like it. It was because of this, you know.
Yeah.
And so it moved from there's not enough Godzilla in it to, well, the characters are really flat. But the characters aren't flat. Yeah. One of the things I liked about it, as I think more and more about it, is you have the – you have Ford Brody, Cranston's son, who ends up in the military. That's normally just a plot contrivance.
Right.
This kind of, well, we need him on the front line, so he's just going to end up being a military guy. But when you look at his background, it completely makes sense that he would end up in the military. Sure. You know, he grows up in Japan. There's this nuclear accident that kills his mother. We don't see his childhood after his mother's death, but you can infer that it wasn't stable. Cranston's pretty much viewed as a nut job. He doesn't have a great relationship with his father. He's exactly the kind of guy that would go into the military. Exactly. Because where else is he going to go? He's a world traveler. He's has a terrible relationship with his father. He has no other family. It makes sense from a character perspective, but the characters are flat.
It bothers me because you're right. There are those three things. There's Godzilla doesn't show up early enough. There's not enough fights. And it, which... to that point, I love what Gareth Edwards did in terms of holding on to the big moments until the end. So we get a glimpse of some POV fighting on Hawaii. We get some of the stuff shown on television in San Francisco. So again, you're kind of teasing the audience saying, all right, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes, here it comes, and now we're going to give it to you.
Right.
So let's tackle that, Michael. Let's tackle those three. I think you articulated that nicely. Those kind of three main objections. You don't get, you know, Godzilla doesn't show up until the end. You know, that he's a bystander in his own movie. The second one where, you know, there's not enough action or not enough monster fighting. And then third with the characters. So, So Michael, why don't you kick off with that first point again? And I think you were just talking about it now. But Godzilla really not showing up until, you know, until a decent amount of time in.
And
so,
I totally disagree because the opening title sequence gives us Godzilla from the very beginning.
Which is a great opening title sequence.
Yes.
It is.
Like, I attribute my quick change of pace into, wow, this could be something interesting, to that really great little opening title sequence. But that's a digression. But yeah, go ahead.
And it's true. And like you said, with the teases, when they find certain things, when Shirazawa is first brought in to show this embryo or whatever the heck it was, yeah, and that something got out, we don't know, unless it's spoiled for you, which I hate when people do this, but a lot of people went in saying, well, I knew that there were going to be other monsters in this movie, and I knew that it wasn't Godzilla, which is too bad, right, because for me sitting there, I didn't know that, and it, right, kept my attention going the entire way.
Yeah, it did. And that was a huge – when you realized that, because I didn't know either. I didn't – I kind of stayed away from the critical stuff.
Yeah.
Went in blind thinking it was going to be Godzilla smashing cities. And when you realize there are other monsters, it's like, oh, this is going to – this is going to get nasty.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be some real mayhem going on.
Especially when they reveal the second monster. Like he kept adding, you know. Yeah. To me, that was – pretty great, you know. He kept, but
right, and the whole idea, you know, how all of that comes about and how their mating call is what stirs Godzilla, and you know, it all of that is watertight. It all makes sense within that universe,
right?
You know, it's not like, oh, Godzilla just randomly showed up.
Yeah,
you but know? And again, to you know, talking about Godzilla's late entry, that just, that's why. I mean, at this point, it's funny because I kind of this kind of matches up, you know, to what I've been thinking about movies lately and what movies I like. Just kind of like, I guess I don't want to be oversaturated from the beginning, right? Like I want to have something.
But that's the desire now. It drives me crazy.
It seems like, to. I mean, yeah, like even with like Pacific Rim has been brought up talking about this movie, and I think the only thing they have in common is like the giant monsters, which is I guess a big thing to have in common. But like that was. You know, they front-loaded a lot of the action in there. There was a lot of action throughout. And, you know, by the end, I was just kind of like, you know, I need more and more. And the last stuff in Pacific Rim just underwhelmed compared to, like, the big middle action scene, you know, as an example. Right. You know, but, like, stuff like – and we talked about this on the Friday Filibuster, but stuff like The Raid 2, which really backloads its action, but it just leaves you with such an impression when you leave. So just that whole – feel of because I used to be like more, give me, I need something, you know, this is boring, right. Where is everything? But
the worst trend or whatever in blockbuster movies, and it's been going on for a long time, is you go to a movie, you watch it, and you can just tell that a bunch of dudes sat in a room and they came up with action sequences, and then as a secondary thought they ask the question, well, how do we string this together with some kind of story?
I think
that's it. That's how most of them are made. And what people are communicating with Godzilla is that's how we want it. We are now – our attention spans are now tuned to being like ferrets on cocaine. And if you don't give us action like front-loaded, if it's not these designs, these set pieces all throughout, then we're going to complain that we're bored.
And to be fair, I think the only time that's worked in human history is Raiders of the Lost Ark, that process, right?
Yes. That's a yeah. Slow burn. I mean, you get little teases. And this is what I love what the Russo brothers did with Captain America Winter Soldier. You get small action sequences, and then you get up to the Nick Fury in the car chase thing. You know, mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Those types of really smart script designs fly in the face of what Roberto Orsi and Alex Kurtzman want to do, like you said, Dan, where they take key set pieces. Like, wouldn't it be cool if we saw this and then try and write a script around those things?
Right. And the thing, it, like that Nick Fury piece, is a kind of classic second act turn. It yes. happens to be an action piece, but it's integral to the plot,
yep.
too. And that's what an action sequence should be, is it should drive the plot forward in some way. It shouldn't just be action. And that's what they are in this movie.
Yep.
There, you know, there's never some sort of, you know, mayhem that's just there to be there.
And
because, it's time for one, the audience is going to get bored if we don't throw something at them.
Yep. Right. And for Godzilla, like, I think you need to keep him because, I mean, he's Godzilla. And when you show him, I mean, when he shows up, it needs to be impactful. So, like, our first full shot of him was in Hawaii, right?
Right.
Like, I remember like turning to you and like going, yeah, when the foot stomps in the airport, right? The huge foot stomps, and then you get the full shot. You don't get the fight, but you get the full shot. But it's just that kind of, it's majestic enough because he deserves that kind of shot, right? And even though they pull back, because remember, the next scene is like the CNN footage.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, which I thought was like, that's ballsy to do that. I mean, here you are building up to, I think in the hands of a lesser director, that would be the big airport fight scene in Hawaii, right? That's what it would be. But it pulls back and it restrains. So,
and that's where we're given the little kid where Ford has to, he can't save his own son, so he's saving this little kid, you know.
Absolutely. And, like, again, it just...
This conversation is infuriating me. Because I'm realizing if Close Encounters were released today, everybody would bitch that there weren't UFOs, motherships, like, dropping down in every scene.
You're exactly
That's
right.
That's what they would want. We need giant motherships all through this. Somewhere in the first act, it should have opened with a gigantic UFO landing.
And we should see what they look like the entire way through.
I mean, I guess if you want Independence Day... they're making a sequel, right? So you're going to get that, right? So, I mean, you can have that. But, like, just keeping the Godzilla beats, like, just doling them out massively. Like, again, when his – because I wasn't expecting Atomic Breath, you know? Like, I had a sense there was another creature in here, but I didn't know the extent of it. So, for that
– I was wondering, are they going to go – are they going to be – is he going to be bold enough to go to the Atomic Breath? Or is it going to be like, that's such an anachronism. We just can't pull it off a modern movie.
But when his tail lights up and it travels up. You know,
As soon as the tail light lit up, you could feel it in the theater. It was like people know,
and then
it's about to go down.
It goes down. He lets loose with just like this epic one. Again, and it fit into – because remember, that was where this kind of interesting simultaneous track of stories are going. Where Ford had just he had just lit up – just lit up the nest, right?
Which was great. And I turned to you at this point. I said that was really smart because not only is – he's running interference for Godzilla as Godzilla's running interference for him.
Right. Right, and Edwards knows that because he pays that off with that really cool little exchange of glances.
Yep.
Right? And to me, Ford, and we'll get into this a little more with the characters, but Ford is, to me, he's my access point to Godzilla. He is my guy because he's there from the beginning to the end. And yes, he happens to be in all these situations, but it's not like it makes sense within the world, but it's contrived, but it's because he is our gateway to that. So,
and he's a more interesting character than people are giving him credit
for. That's right. So save your character stuff because I want to transition to speaking of like the action scene. So as far as Godzilla being a boring movie or, the action, I thought there was a good amount of action even prior to the big finale, like whether the first Muto escaping, that was pretty good carnage. Mm-hmm. Yep. The Hawaii landfall was straight up disaster movie porn, but it worked because you knew you had this sense coming, and then the train, accident. I mean, I thought that all worked. And then the big Muto hijacks the nuke from the train itself was a well done scene, right? So I thought that. Because, again, I saw it the second time, and when you know what's coming the second time, you think, oh, here's all this dead time. But I felt it moved along at a nice clip, actually. You had Cranston, who carried you through the first part with his acting ability. But then you had these nicely placed suspense action moments to take you up to the huge finale. So even the second time, I was like, ooh, I know what's coming, and I'm going to enjoy this part.
I never felt like any of it was wedged in.
Right.
Ever.
You even get the Juliette Binoche thing at the very start of the film.
That's true, right.
The tension in that sequence.
And again, we're thinking Godzilla's doing that too, right? Again, so that is pretty smart. So we're thinking this is because of Godzilla. So we're kind of already thinking, okay, Godzilla's sort of he may be an inadvertent bad guy, but he's still sort of the antagonist here, right? So having those expectations changed was so refreshing to me.
And, what I was not expecting at all from any of the action or any of the mayhem was to feel exactly like I did when I was 8 years old watching these movies in the theater.
Yes, exactly.
There are those three big hits, the two atomic breaths and the tail thing, are as giddy action as you can get if you have a history with Godzilla.
And that's where the spontaneous
applause came
from. They're
so perfectly Godzilla.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right. I mean, like, and that helped the theater experience, even though we were sitting in front of a couple guys who were pretty annoying.
Special needs or whatever the heck was going on.
I don't know what was going on.
We changed seats at one point.
And, the tail thing, Godzilla actually acts in that moment because you can see him time it.
Yeah.
He looks at the other monster and he's like, I'm going to wail on this thing with my tail as he comes at me.
The physics were nicely done with that. Like the second time I was watching, it's like, that's just, it was just well staged for sure. And then just the finishing move was so like violent and satisfying, right? I mean,
yeah.
I did not
see that it wasn't a big fight at that point, because Godzilla at a certain point deserves not to be in a big, long, drawn out.
Right.
You know, he's Godzilla. He'd just grab the thing by the head and shoot breath down its throat.
That's right.
Done.
Here's a problem that somebody had with that. Well, I shouldn't. The F this movie guys were talking about this, that never should have worked, because the Mutos feed on atomic energy, and therefore he would have only been making the one creature stronger by breathing down its throat. So people are even finding fault with the best moment in the film.
But Sarazawa's already or the military's already established that they could be killed by nuclear detonation.
You know, by the force of the blast,
it's not, right?
Right. And again, who knows what we don't know what we don't know what his radioactive breath is made up with, is it? You know, so that's one of those things that you just attribute to the fantasy world, right? I just think there was a lot of I thought the action in there was well done. It all fit. I mean, I forget the bridge sequence too, which is actually one of my favorite sequences in the movie. You know, it's this rainy. It's on the Golden Gate Bridge, right? You've got school buses, mm-hmm. and then you've got Godzilla kind of, and this is where Godzilla really shows himself to, like, the kids. Where, you know, and the kids, which I liked. I think a hack director would have, like, had the kids say, "Oh, awesome!" They were fearful of Godzilla, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they were in awe of him. And then, but he actually kind of runs interference on those missiles again, also inadvertently, but changes that fact of, like, okay, he's sort of the hero in this. Mm-hmm. So
I also love the fact that they designed Godzilla. A CG Godzilla based on a design that was made having to have a guy in a suit.
Yes. Right. Yes.
You know, he still has the weird proportions, the big old giant body, bottom half, and, you know, smaller upper half. And, you know, you look at it and go, there's no way that a lizard would be shaped like this. But it doesn't matter, because right. He is shaped like Godzilla. You could make him look like a Tyrannosaurus Rex, but then he's not Godzilla.
That's right.
And they even got some of the movements down. I mean, I know it was campy towards the end, if you look like Terra Mechagodzilla and stuff like that, where he's kind of like boxing and, you know, doing that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But there are some of those movements that still draw to the fact that there could be a guy in a suit who would move like that.
Right. So let's talk about, like, the characters, and including Godzilla the character. But again, this is another big thing leveled at it, like, the human stories are boring, and, you know, I'm not interested. And I'll just kick off by saying what I've been saying ad nauseum. The fact that these characters didn't fall into the usual Hollywood tropes that you would find in these films was refreshing to me. You know, that in itself was refreshing. Like, the fact that the general was literally trying his best to save as many people as he could. So his disagreement with the good doctor, who obviously turned out to be right, it wasn't one of antagonism or, like, how dare you impede on my alpha dog status. He was just trying to do what he thought was right. He was eventually convinced otherwise, right? But, like, Strathairn's, I mean, he was – so, like, the military, you know, there wasn't –
He would normally be evil.
That's right. He wasn't the military scientist. He wasn't the guy trying to leverage Godzilla's atomic breath into a weapon to be used against the Chinese or something, right?
I mean, I felt when I was listening to them, I felt like – well, I kind of am on Strathairn's side here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I just want to leave this up to Godzilla to win against two other, you know, and then what happens? Because he's a giant lizard, you know. Like, everything that he was saying made sense. All of his objections made sense. He was speaking for sort of rational people. And Watanabe's character was speaking for, well, you know, this is the Godzilla universe, almost.
Right. And even when
nature will right itself.
And when they were talking about the first Muto, you know, remember when Brody asked, why didn't you just kill it? I mean, again, it wasn't like, oh, we wanted to research it because maybe it could, you know, his radiation
it
kill
could
Alzheimer's
have supplied
or something.
Clean energy for the planet
for
the rest of time.
That's right. So, I mean, it was like, well, the thing sucked up radiation. We were just really worried about doing anything that would, you know, wipe out all of mainland Japan. And, you know, so, like, you got that. It did. Right. It made sense. I don't know. It wasn't this kind of ham-handed. There were no bad guys. There were no, like, bad human guys in this movie, you know?
And Ford Brody is kind of a functional character meant to get us into the story.
Yes.
But where people are missing – the tension that I felt and the reason that I connected to him as a character – and the tension that he produced in me in terms of plot is he is a 9/11 firefighter type figure. Mm-hmm. that's what's admirable about him, is every step of the way, he doesn't have to do what he's doing. And part of me the whole time is like, just go home to your family.
Yeah. And I love God's that sake. Sequence.
You know, there is a giant, there are giant monsters walking around, but he's the guy who's like, well, somebody has to do this, or somebody should do this, and I kind of feel like I'm the most qualified guy. Yeah. So let me go ahead and do this, and then I'll go home. And then it just, you know, became a series of, and then I'll go home kind of things, rather than I'm going to be a big hero.
But and up to that, don't you think there's a little bit of, it gets personal for him? Because he knows the first Mudo is responsible for his mom's death and his dad's kind of descent into madness, so to speak.
Right.
So it's not really explicitly stated. It's not like, you know, it's not like the, you know, he lights the, he doesn't light the nest on fire and then says, I got you, sucker. You know, he doesn't do that.
Right. He kind of, he finally gets like, invited into his, or is able to kind of enter into his father's madness when he realizes that it's not madness. And so it's like, oh, this is the real deal. Well, we got to take care of it. You know, then he moves into, we got to take care of this moment. So I didn't even feel like it was a revenge thing. Like, I got to get back at him. It was like, all these years I thought the old man was crazy and he was right.
Yeah.
And so now we're stuck with this and we got to do something about it.
Yeah, Edward sets that up beautifully from the time that Ford has to leave San Francisco to rescue or get his dad out of jail in Japan, and that whole sequence where they're going back to where he grew up and how the island had been quarantined, and it's a very quiet, character-driven, tension-filled moment, up until the point where Cranston dies, and you're like, holy crap, we thought he was the lead character of the movie, and now we're getting a shift.
Right.
And he had it, Cranston had to die, too. You know, like I think that was...
Yes.
I mean, I know some people lament the fact that you lost him, but he had to die to keep the, you know, to keep the story moving in the direction it had to do. Because if he was still alive, that would have changed the way he interacted. It changed Ford's actions probably. You know, once his father died, Ford was just time to go, right? And then
that, in terms, of Ford's marriage, even I thought that worked really well when he was leaving from San Francisco.
Yeah,
that, you know, to me that was a scene where. Because we all have crazy family, where he just got back, he would have been completely justified in my mind saying, you know, my dad's been crazy for 15 years. I can't run to Japan every time he goes off the deep end.
Right.
I just got back.
Right.
I'm just reconnecting with my son. He just asked me, are you going to be here tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not the time for me to, you know, but he's a guy who's like, well... I've got to do it.
And he seemed to do that. He seemed to have general concern for his father. You know, again, the Hackway would have.
There's a sense of duty there. Like,
Wants him. He wants him back. He wants to bring him back to be part of the.
And there's a sense that his wife is like understands this is the right thing to do.
Right.
Like, it's not the cliched. Oh, there's all this conflict. How can you leave? You just got here.
Yeah. Right.
Like, she gets it. She gets him enough to know. Yeah, you got to go do this.
That's a good point.
He'll be back in a couple of days. No big deal. You know, after she's probably waited a year to see him, right?
So, Michael, how about the doctor? What were your thoughts on Ken Watanabe's character?
Well, he was, you know, like Dan said, he's a throwback to the original movie, and he didn't have a whole lot to do aside from being like the ancient Asian wisdom character in the, you know, and they didn't make him the comic relief. They didn't make him something that he wasn't. He was just there to kind of provide. A reference, a context for who Godzilla is and why he operates as he does in this world.
And articulate the theme. You know, he articulates the theme pretty obvious.
In fact, his assistant or his wife or anything had much more of an emotional...
Yeah.
Much more emotion to do and to convey than he did.
Although I thought there were some moments that stood out, like when he went out, he wanted to go to the aircraft deck to see, right?
Yes.
So he had been following this creature for so long... You know, and he just wanted to see that. And, like, even his expression at the very end where Godzilla gets up and, you know, leaves like the stud, right, that he is.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, just that kind of wide-eyed wonder he just wanted to see. But you're right. He, he's essentially he's bringing you exposition. He's kind of setting the theme up.
And he's tying it back to Japan, which they did a really good job of.
Which is nice. It is.
You know, rather than just make it the American version, you know, they really anchored it well in Japan and made it very much the way the Japanese would do it, as opposed to, you know, brought up Pacific Rim before that tries to do this international thing, but it's all these weird, cliched, lame, surface level.
That's right. Like,
you know, like I'm watching...
Yeah.
I'm watching Pacific Rim and I'm thinking, well, why don't you just throw like an Eskimo in there? You know, why not like a, because everybody else is so stereotyped.
That's right. The Russian
guy,
like
you know, it's the like, why don't you just take the guy. Asian woman and put her like in a little schoolgirl outfit? Cause she's that, you know, she's traumatized Asian heroine that's in every anime that everyone has ever seen, you know?
And I may be giving Gareth more credit than he's due, but that may just be an homage to those archetypes of characters that were in those original movies, and this is mm-hmm. what Watanabe was given to play, as opposed to having an entire emotional arc of his own.
So let me. So I guess as we kind of wrap this up, just some general favorite moments from the movie, just favorite scenes, favorite sequences, stuff that just really stood out to you that either illuminates some of the stuff we've talked about, whether you know, giving the characters actually more weight, or what, or the action scenes, or the Godzilla moments. What's just popcorn? There's some stuff that jumped out at you and really got your geek on, I suppose.
Yeah, when Brody was about to get eaten by that Muto, and you see the tip of Godzilla's tail start lighting up in the background. Uh-uh. That for me was like, oh, it's on.
Yeah.
You know, I am 8 years old once again.
Because
it's such a beautiful, you know, we all know the dumb, oh, his spines glow.
Yeah.
Right before we all know it. It's dumb, but it's used brilliantly in the movie to set up that moment where it's like, oh, here it comes.
And there's stakes there because you know the Mutos, if they reproduce, it's the end of life as we know it. So,
yeah. I love
so instead of just watching it as a great special effect, there's weight behind it because there's stakes behind it, and you are actively rooting for Godzilla now. You know,
right?
There's a couple moments that are very character driven for Godzilla himself. One Dave mentioned when the building falls on top of him, and mm-hmm. you've got Ford standing in the foreground and yeah. Godzilla standing in the background, and there's that, you know, presumed contact between the two of them. And then later when he ultimately wakes up, when everybody thinks that he's dead, and you just get this kind of world-weary look yeah. on his face, and he's just like, oh, all right, I'm done. I'm going back to sleep. Just like, leave me the fuck alone.
Like, time to punch out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I heard someone describe him as just he's like the blue-collar
yeah.
dinosaur, you know? Just right. And what a great way to end it. He just kind of slinks off, dips into the water, mm-hmm. and everything's still again until he's called upon later, you know. But, yeah, that was great. It's just like because even when he marches off, right, he does seem like he's just – he's brutalized. So yes. He's just going to kind of like, okay, I'm going to eat some plankton. And
it was worth it. You know, I was a little shocked, but it was worth it that they kind of dipped into camp in that moment where people in the movie are excited.
Yeah.
That he's still alive when it's like yeah. people would be freaking out.
Yeah.
Like, oh crap, one of them's still alive. They wouldn't be excited, but who cares? It's Godzilla. You know, it's the end of a Godzilla movie.
You're giving a soul to a creature who, in other directors' hands, may not have a soul. You know,
right.
would just be a special effect.
Would I, probably the main scene that just really stands out to me is I just love the shots of the whole battleship detachment. Cruising with Godzilla swimming with him. Mm-hmm. I just love that. I think that encapsulates the biggest expectation I had going into it being flipped on its head, right? You know, because again, the trailers did a great job of diverting. Like, I remember those shots of like the fighter jets flying, falling out of the air. You remember that? There was the mm-hmm. shots in the trailer, the fighter jets are falling out of the air. My first thought was Godzilla's picking these things up and whipping them down, right? I mean, that's just what I was thinking. And it's just totally opposite. So just seeing Godzilla swim along with like they had this kind of shared, not necessarily even allegiance, but this shared realization that, you know, if these things do what they're supposed to, what they want to do, then the game's over, right? And Godzilla knows that, and the military knows that. So just that kind of interesting, like, lining up of principles that just shown as they're powering through the Pacific with Godzilla in the middle. I just love that because it was like, yeah, because Godzilla is the man, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love how he's set up as like, you know, basically what Watanabe says is this creature, Godzilla, just doesn't tolerate other giant monsters.
That's right. What was the line? Like, so they call him literal God, right? The top of the primordial food chain, Godzilla, literal God. And then he said like something, well, like, if things get out of balance, nature has what, like, has the force to put things in balance?
Of mm-hmm. taking care of itself. Yeah.
Right. So, and like, and Godzilla is that force or something like that. You know, I mean, he puts it pretty explicit like that. And from that moment on, that comes relatively early during the little slideshow he gives mm-hmm. for, right? I was like, I like this. This is great. This is where it's going. And that just pays off so beautifully. And the other thing I like is I love, again, going with Ford, kind of Ford story paralleling Godzilla, and they had this little connection. When Ford collapses on the boat and then Godzilla collapses
yes.
out mm-hmm. of sheer exhaustion. Yeah. Again, if probably 99 times out of 100, that could be just real corny, right? But it just worked perfectly here because it was earned and it made sense within the context. So, like, so it was actually generally emotional. Right? Even mm-hmm. though I didn't think Godzilla was going to die necessarily because he knew he was going to come back, but just the fact that he's just tapped out completely and he's like, he's given all that he has and he's just down, he's just done. And Ford kind of was, you know, mimicking that as well. So I just thought, that was just those nice touches that really got me into it even more.
Now, before we wrap up, I want to get your guys' quick opinion on something. So we are in a state now with film reviews where everybody and their brother, you know, has social media and writes reviews of everything.
Yeah.
What disturbs me most, and I think this movie has kind of encapsulated it for me, is this need for people to write a review and put down anybody who doesn't agree with them. You know, it's you're not mm-hmm. criticizing the movie itself, but you're criticizing everybody else who you feel is stupid because they don't agree with you. I mean, I'm seeing this even from our colleagues who write reviews, and it's starting to creep into everything, and it's starting to unnerve me a little bit because it doesn't have to be us against you. Can we just talk about the movie itself and the merits on which it stands?
Yeah, I think we were talking about this, you know, speaking of social media, I think this came up. I don't think it's independent of – I don't think it's exclusive to movies for sure because isn't that kind of the state of our political dialogue and that's everything? True. You know, we're all impugning each other, you know, motivations. But I just think isn't just the kind of natural human reaction to set up like just little bunkers and defend your position. I mean, hey, you know, we're kind of doing that here with Objection. I just like to think we're doing it in a more positive way, talking about why we loved it so much, yeah. You know, and kind of, I will take to task the one Rotten Tomatoes article review that said Godzilla was maybe not quite as good as Roland Emmerich's Godzilla. Like, to me, that's in a different planet. I don't know who it was, so I don't even say it, but I just like that.
No, that's bizarre.
That's bizarre. But beyond that, I just think that's lamentable, but I just think it's just kind of standard operating procedure for the human race, which is why Godzilla needs to step in once in a while and take care of business on our behalf, right? it doesn't make sense to me, Michael. I mean, I guess it just doesn't – it's just kind of the ad hominem attack, right? And I think it's just like it's that fanboy culture, don't you think?
Maybe.
I mean, I don't. Do you sense it's a movement? Do you sense like
I don't know, or there's less tolerance that we have for other people's opinions these days. That you know, I can respect the fact that you know you see something different. That we can sit down in the movie theater and see. And to be honest, Dave, that was what I was thinking because you and I have very different opinions on films.
Sure.
And I was expecting us to come at it from two different angles, and yet the fact that we sat there and both felt the exact same way was very surprising to me.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, again, that's just kind of a taste thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, I would never impugn. Like, I think Man of Steel is an interesting thing as well. Like I could totally. Like, obviously, I think Dan and I are both on record of just adoring the movie, but I would never, like. I could understand why you wouldn't like it, you know? I mean, I would never, like, say, oh. I mean, if it didn't work for you, it didn't work for you. I think that's totally legitimate. And as reviewers, I've just come to the idea that, and we talked about this on the Friday Filibuster a little bit, like at the end of the day, you want to be consistent with yourself and for your readership, right? So you develop your taste. You want to be consistent with it. You want to write intelligently about something. So if it is a movie that you lambast, whether it's Avatar, right, or I, Frankenstein, or I'm just thinking my personal stuff,
right.
Like you want to just spell it out why it didn't work for you so that maybe the readers who kind of have found that their taste might pattern after years, kind of have a good sense of what to expect. I don't know. I think that's kind of
right.
Where
and don't
now.
Pretend like you're delving into objective truth here.
Right.
I think that's a good point. Yeah.
Where you get to it because so often, like with Man of Steel is a prime example. Godzilla is another prime example. Is not that people don't like it. It's that their reasons for not liking it, their stated reasons are like, well, that doesn't, that's not even true. That doesn't even make sense. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, just say, hey, I like the tone of Donner's better. Like, I get it. I get what Zack Snyder was going for. I just wish it was funnier. That's I wish it was, you know, like if that like part of it didn't work for me. I totally get that. But some of the other stuff does just doesn't make sense. It's like, well, that's almost like factually not true what you're saying. You know, you're just looking for stuff.
I mean, there are objective elements within criticism that are fair game, for sure. I mean, if they're put the lens cap on during the second act, fine. You know? I think we're down with that. But, you can obviously – you know, I think you can.
Well, and stories have a certain structure, and there's a way of saying, you know, there's a mistake of saying this is what I wanted the story to be, and it's not that, and so I'm angry. You know, that's just
there. You go.
You can say for what it is, or don't appreciate it for what it is. I wish it was this, but that's just a subjective thing. There's a different level of this is kind of how stories work, and the story was moving in this direction and then it didn't fulfill that. That's a different kind of criticism. It's not one that most critics make well. They're not it's rare that a critic is able to say, look, this is the way that the story was trying to move, and for whatever reason, because movies are made by committee, because lots of money is involved, whatever, it got derailed somewhere along the line. They don't make that argument well. They just say, well, it's usually the other. It's usually I wanted it to be different, and objectively it should have been different. And it's like, no, objectively it should not have been different. It's not maybe what you were expecting, but it's what the filmmaker intended to make. And you may not like it, but that's just saying, well, I don't like it. You know, there are a lot of great movies that I don't like. I don't like Nashville by Robert Altman. I understand everybody loves it. I understand why everybody loves it. It just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say this is objectively a horrible movie because then I just look like a moron. There's a reason that a whole bunch of people like it. I just don't. It doesn't work for me. It's not one of the movies that do it for me.
Yeah. And you don't go into a J.J. Abrams movie grinding an axe because he uses lens flare. You know, I hate Super 8 because he has lens flare in it.
Right. And I feel like a lot of the Man of Steel stuff was, oh, this is a Zack Snyder movie. So there was a whole body of critics who were like, I'm immediately going to dismiss this because I don't agree with the politics of 300. I don't, you know, whatever the reason. I don't like the use of slow motion, even though there's none in Man of Steel. I don't, but whatever axe they have to grind with Zack Snyder, that's what they're going to take out on the movie. And they've already decided, you know, it's the John Carter thing, too. That infuriates me. Not a great movie. I enjoyed it.
Yes.
I felt like critics went in like, we've already decided we hate the movie before we've seen it, and we're going to do everything to make sure that it's a failure because we want Andrew Stanton to fail more than anything.
Yeah.
And it's like, this you guys are savaging this movie, and it's not perfect, but it's approximately 100 billion times better than Avatar, which you all fell over yourselves praising.
I mean, it really does bring up, bigger issue of film critique. Like, what is, when you write a review, are you writing it, like, for you, which are you writing it to illuminate what the movie meant to you, and then, you send that out into the wild, and then maybe, then your readers kind of respond to that like it was any kind of writing? Or do you try to write it to tackle, like you said, some kind of objective, big, capital B, big, capital T truth about capital M movies or something? You know, I mean, that's why
unless those objective truths arise, like, you just see, oh, there is a huge mechanical problem with this movie that's just kind of undeniable. It's just there. Then that's one thing. The thing is, critics confuse that. They think they're looking at this is a big flaw with the script, and it's like, well, it's not. It's a flaw with your expectations.
Mm. I mean,
how you figure out which is, that's kind of what separates good critics from bad critics, I think.
I mean, I think, like, for example, Batman Begins. Like, I can say, I love this movie, blah, blah, blah. But, the fight scenes were not as well directed. I lost track of the fight scenes, and Nolan's fight scene direction improved with subsequent movies. I think there's that kind of mix. It's like, okay, I like these fight scenes at the end, but the execution of them were a little off. Or, like, these scenes were just too dark, so I couldn't. I mean, I think that's where a lot of that mixture comes in. Like, Pacific Rim, I could say, the creature design was cool, and I like this and this, but you know, it just kind of lost me at this point. I just feel like then it becomes more about you reacting. And I don't know, maybe that's too.
That's a good, you know, Pacific Rim is a good example because that's one of those movies where it's completely formulaic.
Right.
And critically, I could just savage that movie. Frankly, I enjoy it as fun. I don't think it's a good movie. I think it's a fun movie. It's one of those things where I could take it personally and I could absolutely savage it because as a Del Toro movie, it's disappointing. Mm. You know, Michael Bay had directed it, it'd be like, this is a really good Michael Bay movie.
Yeah, right, right.
It's a really bad Del Toro movie, really bad. It's like, what was he thinking? You know, he was just how often were the money men whispering in his ear when he was putting this together? Because it's so unlike, other than visually, what he would normally do. It's so impersonal and so kind of cookie cutter. And it's like, I suppose I could take that personally and rail on it, but what's the, you know, why? It is what it is. It's a fun movie. It's just not great.
I mean, what do you think, Michael? Where are you coming down on as you think through this? Like, you know, people going after people or impugning intentions or concern trolling. I think that's a pretty good one. You know, people are concern trolling a lot with things, you know, like, you know, well, the Godzilla movies, yeah, this Godzilla movie is just, it's terrible, but, you know, that's just...
I think it's society as a whole right now where we're at in terms of we have our phones, we have our iPads, and we constantly feel we need to put our opinions out there 24/7. I'm sure that it'll reach a turning point where we start to change and perhaps gain a little bit more tolerance for each other. But when it comes to entertainment, there's such a wide spectrum of where people will fall that it's just I don't see it ending anytime soon.
Yeah, it's weird. Part of me wonders if it's not because nerd culture has gotten so
mainstream,
present, and yeah. Mainstream. If there's not a reaction like, no, we've got to, you know, like I've got to cut out my little niche of it,
yeah,
and disagree with most of the mainstream.
And I don't think like anonymous comments have helped either, or message board.
No.
So when you cloak that in anonymity, and that's when it really gets messy, I think. So when you're not accountable, like, again, that kind of goes to it. Like, I feel like I've got, as a guy who's, you know, watched a bunch of movies and have put my opinion out, I've got a record, right? I've got a body of work. I've got a record that I try to be consistent with. Yeah. I try to apply that, those, you know, those tastes. Like, again, you know, Michael and I, we probably don't share a lot of movie tastes.
No.
But again, like, but someone might, you know, click on my review to read it just because maybe our tastes tend to align or someone else, you know. And I think that's to me, that's the service I'm always thinking when I'm writing review. You know, for this movie, whether it's Captain Z, that horrible movie Michael said, or whatever, just like, you know, just be honest, give it my best shot, you know, give it my best take on it. You know, be honest for that small period of time. I then just know that I've got to, you know, just stay true to my record. Yeah, my taste may have changed. Like I said, I've changed a little bit. Like I want... Like, I like my action more grounded as possible. I like stuff to come hit me at the end. I like that build up now, but just be forward about it. You know, I think that at the core is what.
Yeah,
I try to
what you really, the way you really react.
That's
is,
true.
Is the, I mean, that's what you have to bring to the table. So I think there's value if you're a critic in saying, being the guy who says, yeah, Nashville just doesn't work for me. And here's why.
Yeah.
You know, in a respectful way. Like, I'm not going to call you an idiot if you like the movie. Lots of people like the movie. Here's why I don't like it.
And I'd rather push the positive element. Like, I'd rather say, okay, you know, I'm not going to – those idiots who said Man of Steel was bad because of this and this and this, screw you. It'd be more like, look, Man of Steel, like, works for me, spoke to me because of this, this, and this. I'd rather just, mm-hmm. go gonzo with the plus
side. Except with
it.
Avatar.
Except with Avatar. That's true. That's where my whole argument falls apart, probably.
Deserves special scorn.
The other shoe in this that drops is that the suits in Hollywood listen to this type of reaction and adjust mm-hmm. what they're doing based on it, which is what concerns me. And what concerns me about, all right, so here's a movie like Godzilla. You know that a sequel is coming. What is Warner Brothers going to do, you know, to deliver? Is it going to listen to the people who hated the movie, or are they going to go with somebody, you know, stick with Gareth Edwards and say, all right, we appreciate the universe that he's created, and we're gonna give it to him?
Well, money talks. Part of it is, money talks, you know, right? I mean, it's pushed. It's got 100+ million. Edwards was just given a Star Wars movie, right? He was just given the keys to a Star Wars movie, and I think a lot of that is, look, I mean, it's interesting, don't you? In some ways, Nolan seems to have kicked off that block, that giving these kind of, you know, Nolan wasn't as well known when he first got Begins, right?
Right.
So it's given these, like, indie directors, these kind of non-blockbuster churning directors, the shot. And I think Nolan kind of kicked that off, where you've got your, you know, your Bryan Singers with the X-Men. You know, we won't talk about Superman Returns, but, you know, like, you've got these... Like a lot, the Harry Potter movies, like some of those big ones were given to smaller directors,
yeah,
right?
David Yates was a music video director. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so I think that's kind of pushed that. And the money they made, look, at the end of the day, it's about the money, true, right? I mean, Godzilla made bank, and, you know, that's why he got the sequel greenlit. So it's the stuff before that really makes the difference. Yeah. Like when Gareth Edwards presents his movie and his vision to the studio, it's a ballsy vision because he's keeping that to the side. So I think Warner Brothers should be given credit for, like, rolling with that, you know, and investing X amount of hundreds of millions they did into this movie. You know, they got the rewards paid. And that's why I think, Michael, that the sequel wouldn't be distilled, because Edwards now has a record, right?
So I
now
hope so.
So well, I hope so. Yeah. But I think there's a good point about the feedback loop, because you think about, even with Man of Steel, to the extent that criticism of that movie is now, oh, the action at the end, I think it's grounded in story. But you do have to wonder, well, how much of that action is there? I mean, Zack Snyder made the movie that he wanted to make in terms of story. How much of that action is at the end is there because Superman Returns came out and every nerd said, it needs more action. Mm. There's not enough action in this. We don't get to see Superman do stuff in this. And it's like, well, you do in Man of Steel, and then everybody complains about that. Huh. Man of Steel is not light on action. But you do have to wonder, like, is that the studio saying, we need a gigantic finale in light of feedback on Superman Returns, in light of the Avengers? Yeah. It's got to be epic in scope. And Zack Snyder saying, great, you give me the money, I will deliver epics in scope.
Well, in many ways, the rubber's going to meet the road with the Batman-Superman movie, right? Which just, look, I mean, I love both properties, but it's at the surface level, I know, Michael, you've talked about this, it really smells like Warner Brothers is, like, fast-tracking their Avengers, you know, the mm-hmm. Justice League movie, right? And, like, it's called Dawn of Justice. That's what the name of it is, you know. So it's like, are they, to your point, are they reacting to, like, the Avengers cash machine? Mm-hmm. You know, Snyder's still running with it. So is it going to be like, would Snyder have done Batman vs Superman and a Justice League backdoor pilot if it was up to him, or would he have wanted to expand on the Man? Like, I personally could see a way where Batman makes sense in a sequel for Man of Steel, for sure, but it'll be interesting. Yep. Like, that'll be interesting to see. Like, is Batman vs. Superman going to feel like this just humongous Avengers type of thing? You know, because the action may have been big as far as Man of Steel comparatively, but they were different movies, absolutely different movies.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be, you know, I'm on the fence about that one, because I do think you're sort of, I mean, obviously they want to move in the direction of a Justice League movie, and your hands are kind of tied. You can't, at this point, I don't think, restart a Batman franchise on its own.
Right.
No. You know, you've got to introduce him in a kind of world's finest manner.
As a whether finished product. As a finished product.
Whether you do that now or after another Superman movie. But, you know, I also think, part of me says, if I'm Zack Snyder, that's a more interesting movie to make. I don't know that I would be as compelled, other than by the money, as a director, if you come and go, can you make Man of Steel 2? Well, I can, but I kind of told the story that I told. You know, it's like, well, can you make a Batman versus Superman movie? That I can do, because that's totally different. And I could pour creative energy into that. You know, I could see him saying that, as opposed to, yeah, I mean, I guess we can pick up and, because I'm the opposite, I feel like, on the superhero franchise thing, where I tend to like the first movies because I feel like there's actual story, the origin movies. And then I know the common thing is you're supposed to dislike, or you're supposed to like the second one better because it's, you've gotten rid of all the story and you can just go to action. But I always find the second one disappointing, almost always. Because it's like, well, there's no, you know, like the character is set. He doesn't really grow or change much. You know, okay, I don't really, it doesn't really work as well for me as the origin, which is more compelling. And so, I don't know, I would think as a director, it would be less interesting to go back and do it again. You would feel like, oh, we're kind of making the same movie, you know.
So is
Nolan
that the-
fought that by doing essentially different genres every time he did a Batman movie.
True.
It's not, you know, so it did have a story. The character did grow and change every single time he made a movie.
Is that the danger with Godzilla 2 then? Do we need a Rodan? Do we need a Mothra?
Yeah.
Do we need a, you know?
I was thinking about that, Michael, because I have no idea what they do with the second. Like, I mean, I think the perils are there to slip into another message movie, you know? Yeah. I mean, if anything was built to be a straight message, like, I don't think Godzilla was a message movie. I think it had an interesting theme to it, you know? I think, but it wasn't like harped on.
No, absolutely,
you know?
Not.
It was not hammered in, like, you know, it was stated once and then the action kind of bore that out, right? And so I just, like, I was honestly thinking, I mean, are you going to get creatures from space in this one? It's just an interesting Godzilla. I would have no idea where Godzilla 2 would be. And I'm fearful of it almost, to be honest.
And because there's no good precedent.
No.
That's right. I'm fearful.
You know, it's all the same thing in the original series.
And it's not
all,
like the Dark Knight where you can go and, you bring in your Joker and you do essentially a crime film. I mean, it's Godzilla, right? I mean, he's not going to grow as a character. He is an absolute as it is. So, I don't know. Though I would have to say, like, Edward, at the very least, as long as Edwards is helming it, yeah, I feel pretty good about it because, you know, I liked his vision of this so much. So, and I don't feel like he would go back on it. But, it's one of those movies where I'm almost fearful of it, like, especially because I love this one so much,
yeah.
You know?
Right.
So, yeah, no, I have no idea what Godzilla 2 would be. It's beyond just more monsters, right? So, and, I mean, do I want to see King Ghidorah? Not necessarily. I don't think I do.
Yeah.
You know?
Is that the three-headed one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I definitely don't want to see Mecha Godzilla. I don't want to see.
I want to see those little twins, though.
Yeah. Little twins.
We get Mothra. Yeah.
They should get the Olsen twins to do that since their sister was.
Yeah, that'd be great.
They speak the dialogue at the same time.
That'd be fantastic.
And on that note.
Yeah, no, I think we should. I think any Olsen twins is an immediate stop.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's written into the old
the
white man.
Laws of,
yes.
Yes.
That's crossed the line. Surrender your scotch.
That's right. Hopefully this wasn't too reactionary, hopefully. I like to think it was more pro-actionary, which is not a word in the slightest. But just kind of, again, I just left just giddy. I mean, Michael, we grabbed lunch after, and we were just going back and forth just – again, like, I just felt like it tapped into something that I really loved as a kid. It hit all the moments in a big way. Like no money, huge shot was missed out. I thought everything landed. I just thought it was just like you put it best. To me, it was the summer movie to beat. But I mean, I haven't left that movie so jazzed and so psyched in a long time. You know, it's been a while. And I just like this was just. This was just the cat's pajamas for me.
Well, and let's hope that over time people will give it another chance and come back to it and maybe see something that they didn't see before.
Right.
You know, although expectations aside.
I will say, though, as much as we've said we don't want to impugn people's motives, I do honestly think, like, sometimes this is one of those movies where I wonder if I had seen the same movie as other
people.
Right. Like, and that's just me being honest. Like, sometimes I wonder. And again, on the flip side, that's sort of like my Avatar approach as well. But it was just, you know, regardless, sometimes, and then sometimes you think that way, and I think that's okay. So, I don't know. Any closing thoughts, guys? No?
No.
All right.
That covers it.
Well, it's back into the bunker and then immediately out for the Old White Man Cabal Memorial Day cookout, which should be off the chain, if I remember.
Yes.
because they know how to do it.
If there's anything the OWMC can do, it's cookouts.
That's right. And the fireworks, they're actual ICBMs that they launch. So it'll be awesome. It'll be awesome. All right. Well, that is that for this special edition for Objection. We will see you when we see you. Dan Mancini, final word.
Oh, thanks. 10 points easy.